Welcome back. Jim Hopgood here. Who's talking alongside Frank Maloney and Michael Tusky? We hope you tuned in for the last 30 minutes because we had an excellent interview with Corey Alexander, just a terrific analyst breaking down not only Virginia but the ACC. So if by some chance you missed that, go to the Sabre in a day or two and pull up the archived version of that. It'll be well worth your time. Right, we're back. Second half hour tonight until 6:30 when Virginia Tech pregame show comes on. And we're going to be, speaking of radio broadcasts, we're going to have Dave Kane join us here momentarily, the voice of the Hoos. And I think this is Dave's, fourth year?
Yes.
I should know
I
that.
I think that's correct.
Yeah. He's completed three. This is year four. And as Frank and I were kind of joking off air, football and basketball starting to get a little better. It was tough for Dave for those first few years.
You know. Kind of like us. Their first two football seasons. Oh.
He had to generate the excitement on his own, that's for sure. It wasn't coming from the field or the court. But things
or the callers.
Certainly have gotten better. But Dave, as we say, he's a terrific young broadcaster doing a good job in his fourth year. Dave, are you with us? Dave Kane?
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Well, I just wanted to make sure there. At any rate, Jim Hopgood, Frank Maloney here. Sunday night wasn't very pleasant, but look ahead to the game tomorrow night, Boston College, and, of course, NC State. We had your former sidekick on in the first half hour, Corey Alexander, so he was talking a little bit about that as well. But look ahead week of BC, NC State, and Clemson next Tuesday night.
Yeah, you know, I just made mention of the fact that you better have your scouting department working full-time here right about now because, first of all, you go against a Boston College team that's got 12 newcomers. I don't know about you guys, but I can't remember a team putting 12 newcomers on its roster, unless it was a football team we're talking about, in a long time from the college level. And then,
well,
so
help sell programs. You know, help sell programs.
Yeah.
You know, people up in Boston are saying, who are these guys?
Yeah, exactly. And so that goes for the coaching staff and the players as well from Virginia's perspective. So these guys have to learn up on these guys in a little bit of a hurry. But then you have the quick turnaround the next day. You got obviously one day between this game and the next one against one of the most high-octane offenses, to me, in the ACC. I mean, what NC State's been doing lately, they've got some talent on that team, and they're starting to show it. So you got to go on the road then after a late game. That's a tough stretch. And then on top of it, you know, you got 2 days to get ready for Clemson at home. So it's going to be three games in 6 days in a team that doesn't have a whole lot of depth, as we've documented. I'm sure you guys have talked about at some length. So, you know, you got to be very judicious in terms of how you practice and how you utilize your players and your time between those games getting ready for the next opponent. But it's going to be an interesting week for this team to see how they bounce back from what was definitely a disappointing game on Sunday from the Wahoos' perspective.
Dave, this is Frank. Thanks for joining us tonight. You know, Virginia is dealing with a very unusual set of circumstances. They've lost their 7-foot center in Hassan Sen. You've got kind of a depleted core of guards to some degree, and you've sort of thinned out in your big men as well with Johnson's transfer. What do you think Tony Bennett's trying to do right now to sort of reignite the defense and regain some of the momentum that was seemingly just there last week?
Yeah, I think ultimately the good news is, from Virginia's vantage point and Coach Bennett's vantage point, is I think if you've got a system that can sustain this kind of, or I should say withstand this kind of adversity when it hits with that short depleted bench, it's this one, because you expect that you're going to get the consistency in the way of effort game in and game out. And I don't think that there was a lack of effort by any stretch on Sunday. It was just a lack of execution more than anything. So, you know, I think he's preaching to his guys, you have got to continue to fight hard no matter what's going on with the offense. You've got to continue to dig in. It's all about the little things. I just left practice moments ago, and, you know, that was the message that was being preached. You've got to take care of the little things, and you've got to, you know, the saying he always throws at you, the defense never rests. So is that a challenge when you're going to be playing three games in 6 days? Perhaps, but I think that this team, I've never really questioned its moxie and its fight and its grit. The things that I've questioned at times is the ability to execute, and we saw that on display on Sunday night. I mean, you look at this, the way the season's gone this year. Virginia has shot below 40% three times this year. They've lost all three games. You know, every other game they've been able to shoot it at a reasonable clip. In those games, they've gone 12-0. So, you know, I think it's a team that's got to be at least reasonable from the outside. I think they're going to bounce back. I don't think you're going to see Sammy Zielinski struggle the way he has been so far in conference play for too much longer. He's always been a streaky shooter. But you've got to have a little something on the outside. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Well, the crazy thing is, coming off the Georgia Tech game, you know, I thought that, and of course you're sitting there watching every game in person, but I thought that was one of their better performances of the year. And then they turn around against Virginia Tech and just can't throw it in the ocean, which, as you say, for this team, you know, they play great defense. They're going to be in every game because of that. You know, they don't turn it over very much. Generally, they make free throws, but you got to make some perimeter jump shots to beat good competition, and they just weren't able to do that the other day.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia right now is shooting 22% in conference games from beyond the arc. I mean, that's... That's just not acceptable. You got to find a way to hit some of those, because everybody, and I thought Virginia Tech did as good a job as anybody we've seen this year so far, collapsing down on Mike Scott, and that's the recipe. That's what we're going to see until the Cavaliers can find a way to knock down some of those jump shots from outside. But you look at it, and it's not just Sammy either. I mean, you can say Zielinski's struggling, and he certainly has been, but Malcolm Brogdon has seen his three-point shooting percentage dip down to 32%. You look at Paul Jesperson, he's at 25% right now, and so on and so forth. Joe Harris, he's starting to get it going a little bit more outside, but he's obviously showed his ability to score on the inside, which he's been a nice addition to his repertoire. But as nice as that is, you got to have guys that can stretch a defense. I mean,
well, particularly if they're going to double down on Mike Scott, and you got to force them to pay by making some of those perimeter shots. And a lot of times when you're shooting a bad percentage, It relates to shot selection. But the other night against Virginia Tech, a bunch of the kids had good open looks, just not able to convert.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think has been confounding for Coach Bennett. You know, he says, I can't argue with the shots they've been taking. I mean, most of them have been in the rhythm of the offense. At some point, you almost have to just shrug your shoulders and say, this too shall pass. And I think it will. I really do. But it was just one of those nights where nothing went in. And this team has always been that way, at least for the last 3 years, where for whatever reason, they feed off of each other, good or bad. I mean, and it seems to snowball in terms of the shooting. And, you know, I get the sense that they're going to get ignited here sooner rather than later. And, you know, Boston College might be the perfect cure for it, because this is an Eagle team that, as I mentioned, has the 12 newcomers. They've got 9 freshmen, 7 of them scholarship freshmen. So they're finding their way, too, and they're going to have to do it on the road. Hopefully that's exactly what Virginia needs to get them sparked.
Dave, want to pivot to an interesting tidbit that came across the radar today. It's my understanding that Lefty Drizel wrote a letter to the chancellor at the University of Maryland complaining that they are naming the court up at College Park for Gary Williams, which is going to happen tonight in the Duke-Maryland game. Any thoughts on your part on that? And just curious what you think.
Well, you know, I mean, I can't pretend to be in the middle of that university and what goes on up there, but I will say from the outside looking in, Gary did a heck of a job for that program. He took a program over that was foundering a little bit, and you know, obviously he turned them into a national championship team. I don't think there are too many coaches that can say that, so I have a hard time disagreeing too much with it. That guy's meant a lot to the program, so, you know, I hadn't heard that bit of information, but, yeah, I can't say I'm in agreement with Lefty.
Well, more importantly, when is the floor at JPJ going to be named Hobo Court?
I hear it coming down the pike. That's the rumor. I've been reading that.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure.
You know. When pigs fly. Dave, very interesting dynamic coming up here in terms of 3 games in a very short period of time. You know, Boston College late at night, 9 o'clock game Thursday night. Then Saturday night they're playing down in Raleigh against State, and then they're coming back to Charlottesville for a Tuesday night game against Clemson. You know, the time that they had off recently, that should pay off, I guess, or what do you think?
You know, I always have a hard time figuring out how much it really matters. I mean, sometimes you see, and Hobo, you could probably speak to this as a player as well as a former player, but a lot of the time I feel like you'll see a team go into a stretch like, say, oh, they're not going to have their legs. But it's not like they're playing a back-to-back in an NBA. I think that day between makes a big difference, and sometimes it can almost galvanize a team. You're in the rhythm. I think it's sometimes, when I've seen the results, a week off, you come out even more rusty sometimes. So I don't know. I think it can be 6-1, half a dozen the other. The impact of it, I think so much of it is your mental approach as a team and how you come out as a collective unit ready to play, or are you going to come out sort of looking at that as a potential excuse? But maybe not ideal circumstances, but the reality is in this league, sooner or later, everybody's got to deal with one of these stretches where you do have a bunch of games in a short period of time.
Well, you know, two of the three games are at home, which helps, and the trip to Raleigh's not like you're going cross-country. And from a former player, I used to love this because, of course, keep in mind, I didn't like to practice. So the practice between games is pretty light when you have games like this. And I think the only thing where it would be a problem is if you had a player with a nagging injury. If the kids are healthy, what the heck? You know, they could play every day. As they demonstrated at the ACC tournament, you know, teams play three, possibly 4 days in a row, and it's really not a problem unless somebody's hurt. You know, I always say these kids are, you know, 20, 22 years old. Other than Mike Scott, I guess he might be 23. What do they call him, Grandpa or something like that? I heard that.
Yeah,
the other
Mike's
day.
In his mid-30s. Then.
This is Mike's eighth year. Just don't tell the NCAA.
Well, at least he's submitted his Social Security paperwork. He just hasn't gotten it yet.
Yeah, they've got the sage veterans out there, the old man. But I agree. I think you got guys that they're in the prime of their life. I mean, I don't think, physically speaking, you're going to see too much.
Question Jim and I had during the break before you came on is, you know, they've got that little crow's nest for the, you know, the radio and TV crews up there at Cameron Auditorium down there in Durham. How did you guys get Ted Jeffries up there into the crow's nest?
Ted came up a little bit. He wasn't exactly thrilled about the options in front of him. Actually, I got a picture of it. I think I tweeted it. It was pretty funny with when Ted was kind of thinking about what it was in front of him climbing up that little ladder. But I am happy to report there were no injuries. No one was hurt, and we're all here to talk about it after the fact.
Well, I can tell you the real challenge up there for a former basketball player is standing up, because you know it's you don't have a whole lot of room to stand up in that area where they broadcast from. That's for sure.
Yeah, guys, one of the things that was really fun down there, though, that I hadn't been able to be a part of, you mentioned this is my fourth year here, I hadn't been able to be a part of a game where that building was jacked up to see Virginia come in there, and I thought that was pretty neat with the Cavaliers coming in on the win streak against a Duke team in the top 10. The Cameron crazies were amped up and ready. I was looking forward to it. It was neat to see Virginia, in some sense, on a larger scale, be relevant again, and I thought that was manifested through that game.
Well, I hope we'll start playing basketball again like that game, because I thought Virginia played really some terrific ball. Dave, as we are prone to always ask on the show, is there a favorite moment as a broadcaster of Virginia ball games that you can point to this point that you would say is your favorite?
You know, I've got two that come to mind, and they both transpired in the last year. One of them, and honestly, I think I'd be hard-pressed to top this one. This is probably my favorite moment since I've been doing Virginia games, and maybe as a broadcaster, period. But that come-from-behind win in the bottom of the ninth inning against UC Irvine in the regional for the baseball team was pretty special at Davenport Field. You just don't see that very often. The way that thing built up in the crowd and everything that was on the line one game away from the College World Series, it was pretty unique, and it was pretty awesome to be a part of it. The other moment I got to look back to for football was during that Florida State game. I mean, that was just the wildest, most surreal scene you'll ever see, and it was pretty neat to be a part of that too. But those two moments in the last year, kind of neat that they both starting to happen. You get the sense that we're going to have a few more of those magical moments than we have perhaps the previous 3 years since I've been here. So it's been a fun year.
I think absolutely that's the case, and it's funny, Frank and I were kind of kidding. Your first 3 years were kind of a struggle from the standpoint of football and basketball, but we'd forgotten baseball. The baseball program while you've been there has been outstanding, so that's a good point about Brian O'Connor's group, and we're hoping to have Coach O'Connor on the show here in another week or so. But anyway, Dave, best of luck in this next week. Three games to prep for, hopefully three Virginia wins, but we thank you for your time, and we'll look forward to having you back.
All right, fellas, enjoy it. Take care of yourselves.
Thank you, Dave.
Voice of the Cavs, Dave Kane. We've got a couple of minutes before break here.
All right, we're going to go to the Olympic Sports Report this time, and Michael is actually ready. Here's Michael. Take it away, Michael.
All right, starting with women's basketball. The Virginia women's basketball team is 15-6 and 3-4 in ACC play after splitting two games over the past week. They lost a close one to number 11 Miami, 56-53 on Thursday night at John Paul Jones Arena. Senior guard Ariana Moore led the Hoos with 18 points. The team then bounced back by defeating Boston College 69-58 in Charlottesville. Sophomore guard Ataria Franklin helped the Cavaliers overcome a halftime deficit by scoring an impressive 21 points. Next, Virginia faces number 24 Georgia Tech tonight at 7 p.m. at the Gwinnett Center in Duluth, Georgia. They then host Florida State on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. in a game which will be televised by ESPNU. The number 22 Virginia wrestling team smeared Duke 39-3 on Friday and beat North Carolina 24-10 on Saturday in a very successful ACC weekend at Memorial Gymnasium. The team's record stands at 6-1 and 3-1 in the ACC as they host the Maryland Terrapins on Sunday at 1 p.m. The number 2 Virginia men's tennis team opened the season with an 8-1 win over number 46 South Florida on Sunday in Miami, while the number 9 women's tennis team is now 2-0 after beating both number 18 Tennessee and number 21 Texas 4-3 over the weekend in Flushing Meadows, New York. Based on her performance, fourth-year player Emily Frazier was named the ACC Women's Tennis Player of the Week. Finally, Virginia Hall of Fame men's lacrosse coach Dom Starja was named Field Turf's 2011 NCAA Division I Coach of the Year earlier this week. It was Starsha's third win in the six-year history of the award and his second win in a row. Pretty impressive.
Thank you, Michael. We're going to go to our final break, come back with our final segment of tonight's show. Again, we got to get off to make room for the Hokie pregame show, but we'll talk about the ACC hoop schedule upcoming and next week's show. Stay with us. We'll be back after these messages.